either Hoodie or Pete updated the website, which we've recently posted an article on, which is why it's come back in. We have had a website for a while now, but and they updated it and they updated the player profiles. Have either of you had a chance to look at it yet?
I have.
Look at it right now.
The page that's got us all on it, you mean?
Yes.
Like
so,
the roster, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So first thing to note is that Kyle's no longer listed as part of this podcast.
It's just, I did notice that. There's a spot where he could certainly go.
It's, you know, somewhat appropriate given he's not on tonight. And apparently writing his thesis, which, as excuses go, that's pretty good, to be honest.
A thesis on what?
Chemistry of some sort?
Ah, the casters. I'm on there.
I know. How good is it?
No, Kyle.
No. Kyle's only listed as a Grand Prix champion instead. You know.
Just that little thing.
The streamer, Nathan Whalen. What a fucking lie.
That was the one I was going to point out. Yeah, Nate still lists as the streamer, who also streams high-quality MTG content at a convenient evening time slot for Australian viewers. Now, if we go to this Twitch page, Bronson190.
Oh, God.
That, you know, we're going to shill it, but there's not much there. Last stream 4 years ago.
Oh, I do remember sitting at an airport with him on the way to a GP, and he was, that I think it was the height of the, it must have been the one where he was playing there with Channel Fireball as a content creator. And someone said to him, they were like, it's all about the consistency though, like keeping it up. He's like, yeah, it'll be sweet.
I'm glad he really took that to heart.
I mean, the fact that Trent was just streaming his Legacy Cube for the last 5 minutes before we started here means that he's probably more qualified to be the streamer.
Or Kyle. Kyle's streamed more recently than 4 years ago.
If my internet wasn't complete dog shit, I'd stream all my magic. Like, I'd just turn it on for people to watch. But where I live and the people we're through, because we're not through Telstra, but I think even through Telstra, we can't get, like, actually good internet. So kind of just defeats the purpose. Otherwise, I would just turn it on for everybody. I usually, whenever I play Magic, I just stream it on Discord for whoever's like chilling around or whatever. But yeah,
would you commentate on your stream or just literally have it open as you're playing?
Oh, if I was on Twitch, I'd do the whole like the talking thing for sure.
Yeah, cool.
I'd much rather sit there and talk about games than sit there in silence. But that last one was a bit like I didn't really want to talk because there was like 40 permanents in play and 40 permanents in both players' hands. So it's just one of those things where you just let it go and see if you can get the time warp.
And then snap it back.
I've been watching old SCG coverage. I've just basically been going through and finding, pulling out every stream that was Cedric and Patrick.
That's a joy.
Because I'm not really there for the magic. I'm just there for the two of them. And I'm currently, I was watching Karns. No, not Karns. When Karns was the oldest set. So, like, when Jeskai Black and, like, Four Color Rally were decks. That's that sort of era. And they had a green-white Megamorph mirror. I think it might have been green-white Megamorph versus Bank Company. And they just, both players had, like, 20 permanents in play. And, like,
God,
it's just a mess. It's not quite green-white Devotion, but...
Yeah. Yeah, I watch basically all of them every, what was it, like Friday, Saturday morning through to Monday morning?
Yeah.
I loved it. Yeah. What a joy. I really hope they come back. The Resleevable podcast is just, it's just reignited my passion for like the SCG Tour instead. And
for sure. That's part of the reason I think I've been going back to them is just wanting to listen to the two of them talk about like basically anything. It doesn't really matter what. They just have such incredible chemistry.
I've said it for years that Cedric Phillips is my favorite content creator, not just in Magic, but just in general. I think he does a phenomenal job in anything he puts his voice to. He's just fantastic at it.
Do you have a favorite, Ian?
Cedric, absolutely.
Oh yeah, wow.
Cedric, both as a content creator, but also Cedric's really interesting to me because he fundamentally works in marketing, essentially. Which is very close to the area that I work in. I work in public relations. So there's also a little bit of that. Like, I find a lot of his thoughts on anytime he's talking about promotion, he's very outspoken, for example, about basically the way the SCG Tour promoted its players compared to the way the PT failed to, essentially, and Magic's organized play failed to. That's always really interesting to me, that promotional aspect and all those thoughts. How about you, Dan?
Oh, for me, it's... This make me sound like such a casual, but not even close. It's Seth from Magic Goldfish, like, by a million miles. I watch his streams, like, literally every day. I could literally watch him play.
What's his last name?
Good question. No, I don't know.
That's a really good question.
I have no idea what his last name is.
Is that Saffron Olive?
Yeah, Saffron Olive.
Yeah, Saffron Olive. Yeah. I just cannot... I have for years, like, I started watching his stuff when I started playing Magic and have never stopped. I watch every single video he puts out. I think, I don't know, just the way his mind is, the way he plays. It's not obviously not high-level competitive Magic or anything, but, wow, he helped me to tap into what I enjoy playing about Magic. So, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Oh, that's the goal, right? And I also, that would not be an unpopular choice.
Oh, of course not. Yeah. Obviously, he's one of the bigger content creators. But, I mean, similarly, he's quite divisive, especially in the extremely enfranchised community. I think he's amazing. And it's funny, like, his voice. if I have him on and I've got speakers, I'm eating lunch at work and someone comes in, they'll be like, what in the hell is that? Like, who is that? And I'm like, oh, that's right. He's got this really weird voice that I completely puts it on, obviously, but, like, I completely forget. I've listened to him so much that it sounds like, you know.
Yeah, it's so normalized. Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely.
It's interesting you say that, because I have never, don't think I've ever, well, I've never voluntarily gone and watched his stream or listened to him, but the one thing I know about Saffron Olive was when he tweeted, and this was going back a while ago, that content creators should be reviewed for cases of getting into the Hall of Fame.
Oh, did he?
And I thought that was quite absurd.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, he got a lot of shit for that, and I remember not thinking too highly about that.
He did. That was interesting because I remember this, and I tend to agree. I think that's not really what the Hall of Fame is, but I remember because part of his point was one of the arguments for Chris Pakula being in the Hall of Fame that people bring up is all of the work he did, like, outside of his achievements in the game, but all the work he did and how vocal he was about stamping out cheating in competitive Magic.
Oh, wow.
And the fact that, like, the Hall of Fame is not that well defined, or at least it's nominally just about, like, your actual achievements in tournaments, but... That's an argument people bring up for Pakula.
Yeah, that's actually interesting because, like, from someone like my perspective, like, I don't really know that much about the Hall of Fame or really care that much who's in it. But to me, like, he is 100% in my top five players ever because I consume and love the content that he does so much more than anyone else. So he would be in my Hall of Fame, but obviously my Hall of Fame is not the Hall of Fame.
And that's why I think that the Hall of Fame is, I think it's technically the Pro Tour Hall of Fame, but it's mostly dead anyway, now that they've completely changed organized play, which is relevant because they've recently just announced more changes and more cancellation. I think they're ending the NPL amongst other things, which we thought we'd lampshade. We're not going to talk about it because you can go listen to any other Magic podcast this week and I'm sure they'll be discussing it in depth. But suffice to say, there was a big non-announcement where they didn't really announce anything, they just said different things are coming, and that's kind of been one of the big issues in Magic this week. But as I said, that's about all we've got on it because there wasn't that much to talk about and everyone else is going to talk about it. So
you guys are going to miss the NPL heaps, right? Like, you know, tuning into it every day, following all the pros, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
It's been a huge success, so.
We've talked about this before, I think, Trent, that we, between us, couldn't name all of the NBL players, I don't think.
I couldn't name five, let alone all of them.
Yeah, nah. I'm off it. It's shit that they got rid of it rather than trying to rescape it, but whatever. Like, who cares? Just, like, whatever. Sorry for the people that lose their job or lose their contractual obligation for their income, but, like, I don't know. We've been batted over the head so many fucking times over the past however goddamn long. We're just another just another knock for everybody at the top.
Mm-hmm.
So, moving on then. Trent, you mentioned this slightly earlier before I derailed us with Nath's questionable title of streamer. But you mentioned we have been playing some Highlander. So Dan and I both played in the first week of the 7-point Highlander League that's being run on Magic Online. Dan, what did you end up playing?
I ended up playing Isaac Egan's Academy deck. So it's blue-based, bunch of artifacts, and some really interesting play lines to get wins. So it doesn't win in the conventional artifact ramp style. It kind of seeks to... the best way I can put it, having, you know, played it maybe, I don't know, 30 or 40 times now, is that you really have to identify, it's like there's a tiny little thread that you just have to thread through multiple turns to find your way to a win. But once you start threading, it's remarkably resilient, the deck. And I mean, we'll discuss it probably further in a bit, but I mean, it really is a work of art. And I'm certainly not qualified to, you know, give the best rundown of exactly why, you know, everything about it and how on earth he came to build it. But, it, I mean, it's really cool.
And how did your matches go for the league?
Oh, horribly. Yeah, I got paired against, two American guys. One at least is a somewhat known, apparently, Moto Grinder. And I kind of found... which is funny because then subsequently playing the deck, this didn't happen as much. I mean, I just straight up went like 0-2. And I was a bit frustrated and I kind of felt a bit like... I've played artifact ramp decks before and I was getting the kind of opening hands where I'd mull to six and then either have the ramp or the payoff. Even though this deck isn't like... it's not like you've got an Ugin as your payoff or something, but there's a few things need to happen, a few key pieces need to get onto the battlefield to make the whole thing start churning. And I just wasn't getting any explosive starts or anything happening. And then just would kind of get pretty much just run over by, you know, good stuff piles and, you know, Okos and all of that stuff, you know, Deathrite Shamans, you know.
Was this the Time Walk deck? Sorry, like, sorry, the wheel deck where you're trying to like draw seven and...
Yeah, so there's like all the wheels, Time Twister, Wheel of Fortune, the one from Modern Horizons 1, Echo of Aeons, which you can obviously cast twice, the Memory Jar. There's like many, many ways to wheel, and it's all about setting up a situation in which you can be wheeling, preferably with a Narset or a Hull Breacher in play, obviously, makes it very easy. Or even with an Urza in play, because if you wheel with an Urza in play, it's got, there's loads of zero drop artifacts that you can then play out, start tapping them, and that's where that engine starts coming in. So you start building that engine, and then if you hold up the one red and then you've got another wheel, you can just kind of keep going. And if you get lucky enough, like I did on, there's a tournament at Good Games, so sorry, I'll skip ahead to this just really quickly. There was a tournament at Good Games of the weekend. I only got to play one of the rounds because I turned up late. But I was able to get a turn two win, which easily should have been a turn one win, except for the fact that on my Bolas of Citadel just whiffed two. I had two lands come up on top. But an example of this, the explosiveness is that you can go, it was, I think it was turn one, artifact land, Mox Opal, and I'm not sure, maybe a Bauble or something like that. And then so I play those three out, and it must have been... gosh, I can't even remember what it was, but I was able to tinker on turn one and then tinker to Bolas of Citadel. On top was Memory Jar, put the Memory Jar into play, crack the Memory Jar and away we go. And it was only for whiffing enough lands that I had to stop. And then he passed the turn, he puts out a land, passes it back, and I just go on to win the game. But I did not get that kind of start whatsoever. I actually wasn't aware it was capable of that fast of a start until I did that in paper, but playing it online... I just kind of, was just a bit frustrated in the end, just sitting there kind of thinking, this is that same feeling you get when you want an artifact deck to work and a ramp deck to work, and you just either sit there with all the mana and nothing to do, or, you just sit there with a bunch of threats in hand that you can't cast.
Yeah, I do think that one of the things about this league is because you play two matches in a week, and they're often, pretty much always, they're going to be at different times, right? So I played one of my matches on Wednesday and one on Friday, I think. So what that means, I mean, it's great for scheduling, right? It's really easy to find 2 1-hour gaps, although it has been a little bit challenging, I don't know about for you, Dan, but for me, with just some of the time zones and trying to find a time that lines up with opponents in different time zones has been a little bit difficult.
Oh, absolutely. I had a terrible experience where my opponent said, okay, so we're going to meet, it was like Thursday EST, which will be your, so my Friday EST 9 a.m. or whatever, he said, which is your Thursday 11 p.m. on Thursday for you, AEST, Australian Eastern Standard. I'm like, great. So I'm going to be there Thursday night.
Yeah.
For me with kids and stuff, I'm not usually even up past 11. So I've got to kind of, you know, had to make sure I stayed up, had everything open, ready to go, sat there waiting for half an hour. He didn't show. And then it was just annoying. And then went back and read his message, looked up what the time was in American time and realized that it was 24 hours away. So
yeah, yeah.
He just kind of, he'd just made a bit of an error, but it was it just turned out to be, yeah, overly, it was just odd how badly that affected me, because it meant that I had to play during work the next day in the office. Like, was the only other time we were going to get in. So, and yeah, just sitting there. And he, that guy was actually playing an artifact ramp deck, but a more, much more traditional artifact ramp deck, you know, where he was ramping into Ulamogs and Ugins and things. And for whatever reason, just had no trouble at all doing that. It's like turn 2, 13 mana, doing whatever he wants. And always, you know, seemed to have a Tinker in hand as well. So it was, yeah, it was very, very tough and I got crushed. But yeah, there was one good game that I won where I ended up ulting Tezzeret to attack. I think he was ended the game on negative 130 or something. So that was fun.
One of the things I found with this league is that because you play fewer matches and we're used to playing in tournaments where you play a bunch of matches in a row, or even just playing like Magic Online leagues, I'll usually play multiple matches in a row, is that the losses feel much worse because you lose and then there's no like, oh, well, we'll just play again. We'll go to the next round, you know,
sure,
keep moving or whatever. You just sort of dwell on it because you don't have another match for 2 days.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I did precisely, I really tried not to, but I definitely, especially because it was my second loss in a row and the scheduling conflict that we had, meaning that I was at work when I did it,
yeah,
definitely left a bit of a bad taste in my mouth. But this time, the new rounds are up, so I've messaged both of my people, and it looks like they're both American again. So, making sure that we get it right this time.
I've got a European opponent, one of my opponents, which is actually worse, I think, or it's about as bad. It's about as bad as my American opponent from the first round, who was only available during the day, when he's at work, which is just our night time. It was available like 11 till 5 every weekday. Like 11 p.m. here to 5 a.m. And I was like, that's
precisely what my opponent said. Yeah, it was like 11, what would be the equivalent of my 11 p.m. is like the only time I can play. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, so now I have the same thing because I have a European opponent who was available in the like afternoon and evenings, which again is just overnight for us.
Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly.
I've also got one Australian opponent though who was in the same time zone as me, which is very exciting.
Oh, that's cool. Very nice. Yeah, these players seem to have a pretty good grasp of what they're doing. I'm not sure if they're reading the 7-point Highlander website or, you know, really following the strats, or they're just particularly good deck builders, but I'm definitely coming up against some. I mean, I guess it's not impossible to make a deck look good when you just add all the good cards that have been printed in the last 3 years. Plus.
Yeah, I was going to say, as we were talking about in our team chat earlier, it was just play all the 2019 cards, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just Mono Eldraine. Dot deck. Yeah.
That's like, there's a deck. I was reading, so there's a subreddit for 7-point Highlander, which is not super active. It's become a lot more active recently because there are content creation incentives for this league. So there are prizes for content creation that get given out each week. So, for example, I wrote a tournament report, I suppose, for the first week, which is on our website, so thefaction.gg. So you can go have a read of that if you want. And there's also a post on the Reddit, which is 7PH. So, but someone else wrote a really great post about Thassa's Oracle and the history of Thassa's Oracle decks, essentially, in Highlander. But my favourite part about it is the first point they talk about, which is a deck from CanCon early last year. So about a year, a little bit, maybe a little bit past that ago. And so the deck that took down CanCon, in fact, I think it put 2 in the top 4, I believe. It's... Dan, Trent, you might know this, actually. Do you know the deck I'm talking about?
Not off the top of my head. I may, if you, like, as you talk, I might spike a memory, but I...
So I'd like both of you... Let's play a game, then. How many points do you think this deck is worth by today's points?
Oh, no. 12? Ooh.
Trent, what do you think?
So when was it released? Last year.
CanCon last year, so early last year. I think March or April, maybe. Oh, no, sorry, before February. So there was a points announcement in February, so it must have been January or early Feb.
Alright, just let me think. Yeah, I'm going to say like 15.
Yeah, 15 is correct.
Wow.
So at the time, Oko was 0, Thassa's Oracle was 0, Flash was 1, Wishful Talisman was 0, Mystic Sanctuary was 0. So this deck had an Oko in the sideboard, because it was unpointed, so you could just play it the sideboard. It was like a Flash deck that could win with Thassa's Oracle. And...
I didn't have Wishclaw, but I had Jace.
Yeah, so the points now would be Thassa's Oracle at 3, Mystical Tutor at 2, which was 2 at the time, Protean Hulk at 2, which is still 2, was 2 at the time, Flash, which was 1 at the time, is now 2, Oko's now 2, but was 0 at the time, Tainted Pact is 1, Merchant Scroll 1, Wishclaw Talisman 1, was 0 at the time, and Mystic Sanctuary, which is 1, but was 0 at the time.
Yeah, that's incredible.
So it's just in 12 months or a little bit over, it's doubled in points more than, which is incredible.
Mm.
that's absurd. It's actually absurd. Oh, boy.
How have your matches gone, Ian?
Well, so it's funny you mention people being good in this format. So my first round I played on Wednesday. So I've been playing a 4-color slush puppy deck, which we talked about last week, and none of us knew the origins of the name, but we've since been educated and we looked it up. So I was playing that deck, and I played against Rob Lark, who is a well-known South Australian Highlander player, playing he's well-known for playing Kess, Grixis Kess. So he was playing that. And I played one really interactive game. I played one game where, game one, I played a Deathrite Shaman on turn one on the play. He, Inquisition of Cosmolection, I think he played a discard spell and took my Dak Faden, at which point I promptly top decked Savine's Reclamation to reanimate my Dak Faden on turn two, and just ran away with the game with the turn two Dak. And then game two, he had creatures, or he ran away with the game with creatures, I don't remember exactly. Game 3 was really interesting and really interactive and actually a fantastic game. And it hammered home to me how much experience matters in this format. Because I went and looked back at the game afterwards and I spent probably like half an hour reviewing this game and thinking through different lines and still wasn't sure what the correct play was, which was a very cool feeling, actually.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a good part of the format, isn't it? Like, you know, we play our standards, our moderns or whatever, and then as soon as you start actually playing the format on, you know, in paper or testing on Arena or Moto or whatever, you really start getting the wheels. The wheels are already greased because you've been playing Magic and whatever, you know, in these constructed formats or modern formats, you've had them for years, and then you step into something like Highlander and it's just a new world. And it's just like going back and learning about Magic again from as if you didn't know how Magic actually worked.
Yeah, coming into the tournament, I was really, Highlander, God, like I've been doing so many other formats and I don't know if I can, you know, stuff putting together a Highlander deck. And I messaged, I think I said this in the last one, that I messaged Mike and kind of said, can you build like a Urza commander deck and just strip out all the like non-commander cards and play it as a Highlander deck? And that's when he was like, hey, you should check out Isaac's list. It kind of is a good version of that. Once you put it together and start playing Highlander a bit, it's super addictive. You really want to play. I can see why they're promoting it the way they are. It's a really good format and the games play out pretty uniquely. Like, you know, there's certain cards that it feels like players have a lot of the time, but they don't it's you still get really unique good games all the time. I'm really into it.
Absolutely. I'm the same. We played two league matches over the past 2 weeks. I've probably played 15 or something. We're about 15 matches, just messaging people in the Discord and playing against people who are around and won a game, and I've had so much fun doing it and playing these games. So it is a fantastic format. It's very quickly becoming my favorite, or my second favorite format. Cube will always be number one.
Yeah, I feel pretty similar, actually. I think this would come a solid second to Cube.
Yeah, for sure. And also, a shout out to Mike Swan as well. You mentioned him, who not only is 2-0 in the league, and the only one of the four of us from the team who are playing who's 2-0, but he also took down that Highlander event at Good Games that you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, Mike is he's really killing it with the Highlander lately. So I look very much forward to seeing how he continues, because it looks like he truly is a deck crafter and builder, and he thinks very much about all the different pieces of the decks that he builds. So I know that even between round one and this, you know, upcoming round two, he's made a few tweaks, and I very much look forward to seeing how that works for him, because every now and then Mike seems to be in a position where he has the opportunity to just spike something. I think it was at a Coburg Town Hall. There was the big Good Games Modern event.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if it was his prison brew, but it was some brew that he was on. And I think he had started it out like 4 or 5-0. He did really, really good start. Couldn't end up backing it up, you know, to top 8 or anything. But he did really well. So I hope that this is his chance to shine now.
Yes, absolutely. He's playing a really cool 4-color Lurrus deck, which I am a big fan of. It's really interesting. It's actually, to me, it's a little bit reminiscent of a deck I remember watching Alex Crowther play at the last Magic Invitational, but it's a base Mardu deck with a lot of the aggressive creatures that you'd expect, and some like Mother of Runes and Giver of Runes and disruptive elements with like Kitesail Freebooters and things like that. And then with a equipment package with Stoneforge and Skullclamp and Jitte. And then between that gives you a little bit of grind. And then also obviously Lurrus is a fantastic grindy card.
Mm.
I think it's a deck that plays a long game surprisingly well and has a blue splash for some cantrips and snap custom age and blasts out of the
box. Yeah.
It's a very good deck.
He had a great game. He was playing against a pretty full-on control player at Good Games, and I think it was probably 3 or 4 turns in, because it's quite a grindy deck, so no one's really able to garner loads of card advantage or anything. And he thought sees the guy. The guy responded with it was like some counter, whatever the counter was that he responded with. Mike responded with Pyro Blast. What's the one that the red counter?
Red Elemental Blast or Pyro Blast?
Yeah, so I think first it was Pyro Blast, then the guy forces pitching another card, and then Mike Red Elemental Blast the force. So the guy's gone down like 4 cards after the Thoughtseize resolved. God. Yeah, so he kind of mind twisted the both of them for, well, 4 and 3 respectively, but definitely came out on top. The guy was just then completely empty-handed and no chance.
Yeah, so that's a sweet deck.
Oh, yeah. Yep. And you always want to get your two red counter spells out of the sideboard and have them both in your hand ready for a counter war.
Yeah, well, I think I've reached the point where I've basically decided I'm not going to play any deck that doesn't have Dreadhorde Arcanist and a bunch of blue cantrips and then getting to play all 4 blasts.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, and Dreadhorde Arcanist is so good.
Arcanist is incredible. I've already had several games where, like, I've played it on turn 2, and then all you have to do is protect it, and it just runs away with games.
Yeah, oh, yeah, for sure. Yep. It is the very definition of a kill on sight. Do not let them attack.
I should mention as well, so I did end up winning my second match as well. So I'm 1-1 now. I played against a 4-color Thassa's Oracle combo deck in a very interesting game that I'm surprised I won. And it's funny you talk about how everyone plays really well. And I actually found that I had sort of two varying opponents. And I had Rob Lark, who definitely outplayed me, and then I had another opponent who I think actually let me off the hook a couple times and let me back into games that I didn't expect to win. We also, as I mentioned, with timing difficulties, I ended up playing that game at, I think it was 11:30 at night by the time I started it on a Friday after a full week of work, so my brain was not fully there, especially by game three. I was sort of just playing my cards, and in the end it turned out all right. It was very good. I managed to overcome a Dark Confidant that was in play for like five or six turns, and a Renan 6 that was in play for about as long as well. So not often that that happens. My favorite moment from that game is my opponents had Bob in play for several turns, and they have three cards in hand, and they have like 10 lands in play or something. And I cast a Dig Through Time in their end step, fully expecting it to get countered. And there's this long pause, and then it resolves. And I'm shocked. Like, I can't believe it. I'm like, so your hand has no counter spells, and like, what's in your hand then? Like, you've got all your mana untapped.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me after the game that they were convinced they had that game sewn up because their hand was Hull Breacher and Opposition Agent. So they were like, well, they can't tutor. He can't draw extra cards. I've got this game. And I played a Dig Through Time, which, as they said, technically doesn't draw cards or tutor. No. It's somewhere in between.
Exactly. Perfect card. Oh, that's great. Yeah, and that's the thing with Highlander. Like, I think the more we all play it, the better we'll get at assessing this kind of thing. But, you know, I know that one of my big weaknesses that I'm trying to overcome with Highlander is just thinking they've always got Force of Will in their hand when, like, a lot of the time, like, I'll sometimes sit there if I don't know if I don't know the list of the player, but I see those types of cards or just any blue, I'm always playing around things like Force and Daze, and then sometimes after the game we're like, oh, you know, I really wasn't sure if I could go off there or whatever. And they're like, dude, I have like one counter spell in my deck.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even have a Force. I'm like, oh, okay. I guess that's a thing too. And even if they did have a Force, like, it's not necessarily the one card in their hand. You know, and they're not necessarily in a position where they can even, you know, because pitch another blue card either. Like, they don't always have it. And I think I'm playing a little bit like, I think when I'm, I feel like I'm almost playing to lose when I play it, just assuming that they've always got everything and I'm not making them have it.
Yeah, I think I find that as well. It's something I've also had to consciously try and counteract, especially because I've played a fair bit of Legacy, not recently, but I played a lot at one point last year preparing for one of the Lotus Box tournaments, which was a tournament series that was run by Lotus Box, and they ran, I think they were fortnightly, maybe, tournaments, but they had a leaderboard, and I top aided I did well in one of the early ones, well enough that I was, like, in contention for their invitational at the end of the year that was top 12, I think. So I actually tested quite a lot of Legacy, and in that format, They almost always have, like, the Delver decks always have a Daze or a Force of Will. Like, you always play around it when you can. You always, like,
yes, exactly.
You're always aware of it. And having to, sort of scale that back in Highlander, because it's like, well, at most they've got Force, other Force, and Daze in their deck. Like, at most there's three of them, but most decks won't even have that. So it's definitely an adjustment. And we specifically talked about it, actually, earlier this week. And I remember thinking that in my second match this week, where I had a Dreadhold Arcanist on turn two, but my opponent had an island in play, and I caught myself thinking, oh, maybe I'll wait and play around Daze, and I just thought, what, they have one Daze in their deck. Like, if I play around it now, I'm just gonna, like, wasteland myself. I'm gonna basically be destroying one of my lands for the whole game. If they have it, they'll get me, but, like, I can't just play around their one of Daze.
Yeah, you're giving them a free time walk. It's crazy. Like,
so in the background as we're doing this, Trent is drafting, and I've just seen him open a Cody. So, How's your wallet feeling, Dan?
I reckon the offer's still around. the $100 offer's still there. Get it in. Coach, here he goes. Oh, my God. He actually put it in his deck. That's amazing.
Like a reasonable Cody deck. A decent
I'll take it. I'll take that money. Thank you.
You can't. You can't just take it and put it in the sideboard and then win all your games.
I won't. Don't worry.
And you can't just have it in your hand and never cast. It has to hit the battlefield.
This deck looks good, though. This deck looks like a good Cody deck.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
You can continue your conversation about Highlander.
Anyway, as we said, Highlander. yes. You mentioned earlier you talked about, like, an Urza Commander deck. And yes, that's such an interesting point, because what I've decided to do for the second week, inspired by Swanee a little bit, is I've decided to play Commander, and I'm playing a Lurrus deck.
Oh wow!
And I'm still playing Breach, but I'm playing basically Grixis tempo with a Lurrus companion with the Breach combo, but I'm playing Black Lotus instead of Lion's Eye Diamond because of its synergy with Lurrus.
Wait. Did you say you're playing Commander?
Well, it's close, because I get to have a companion, which is basically a Commander.
I see. Okay, but this is within 7 points.
Yeah, sorry. Yes. Okay.
I thought you were like saying you literally got out and played a Commander game. I was like, oh, cool.
That's correct. I've decided to stop playing Highlander and playing Commander instead. No, I just mean that, like, the idea of having access to a card every game that starts outside your hand, and it's incredibly powerful, and I'm playing with Lotus, and leads to some incredibly powerful starts as well. In one of my practice games earlier this week, I had my first ever turn one kill in Highlander.
Oh, nice. How'd you do it?
Just land, Lotus, Breach, yep. Brain Freeze. That's the three-card combo on turn one. Felt really good. I was playing against a Shops opponent as well. So, no, actually, that was against a Dredge opponent. So, I think I'm still the good guy.
Yeah, very, very cool. Yeah, I'm still at that point with Dredge. I'm at the point where, like, if someone, well, possibly, I don't know how much has changed, but I definitely got to a point in Modern where I was like, okay, cool, I can look at your graveyard and make some sense of what's going on here. Whereas when I started playing Modern, it was like, I guess you killed me. I have no idea how, but I guess I'm just dead because you said so. And I played a side game with Jared, and he was playing his Highlander Dredge deck, and it just felt like I'd started playing Modern again. I just had no idea what he was doing. It was, the graveyard was absolutely full to the brim, you know, two turns in, and he was just all kind of synergies that you probably don't get a chance to see in Modern.
Yep.
Man, that guy lives and breathes graveyard decks. Like, it's so funny because he puts his graveyard just pretty much right in front of him. Like, it's like this big fan of cards that just kind of sit there, and he knows what they all do. But unfortunately for me, yeah, no idea.
Dredge in Highlander is really interesting because there's some real stinkers in the deck, and there's a lot of cards that, like, I had to read several times because I've never seen them before.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's a lot of... It was just, yeah, there was loads of stuff he was doing that I'm like, I don't know, that's not conflagrate. What is this?
Yeah, honestly, Modern Dredge is a bit boring. It does the same thing every game. Like.
Mm. Yeah, it still is a deck that I'd like to pick up on Modo. Perhaps I will now that I've had to sign up to one of the Mana Traders accounts again. Just play it so I fully... Because you know, like, for most archetypes, you don't kind of get it until you play it.
Mm-hmm.
Which was very much the case with this Highlander deck. Every time I play it, I feel like I'm learning some, you know. Isaac said to me, he was like, you know, give me any feedback on the deck if you got it. He said, it's going to be a very clicky one to play on Modo, which is not ideal for me since I'm not exactly the fastest Modo player, but it hasn't been a problem so far. But every single time I play it, it's like a new synergy makes itself, like, kind of presents itself. I'm like, oh my god, so that's how that card can interact. You know, like, the amount of interaction that he has going with Zurin Orb is just off the charts. When you pair, like, a Zurin Orb with a Crucible, and then you add a fast bond, like, and then if you've got Bolas of Citadel, you can be landing off the top with fast bond and then sacking the lands to Zurin Orb and then playing them back with Crucible, effectively having infinite life and mana of all colors, and then wheeling into things like Urzas and stuff that can then play out the whole deck. And usually I've found that my easiest win con is just once I've established that I can play my deck and have, you know, everything going, is just playing a Mycosynth Lattice off a Karn. But there are a few different ways to win, and you can assemble a pretty insane board, especially with things like, is it Mirari Conjecture?
The Antiquities War. Mirari Conjecture is also a very sweet card, but not good in your deck.
Yeah, exactly. No, not at all. It's the Sorceries and Instant one. Yeah, so it's like, you can, there's many ways to make all your artifacts into creatures. Yeah, many ways to play out the entire deck. And there's just lots of redundancy and ways to get there too, right down to even something like a wish claw talisman, where it's like once you start threading that needle, if you when you can see the line, and your opponent will never concede, by the way, that they will never concede until you are literally have played the Mycosynth Lattice or the attack them for 150. Like they can't see it necessarily until it's happened. And the wish claw talisman is just another way of continuing that thread, because you're just kind of trying to hold on and draw through and wheel and do things that generate other things and other synergies until finally you can then find a wish claw talisman or your Khan or whatever it is, or the wish claw talisman finds the Khan and the whole thing just kind of comes together in one glorious turn. And it really is a glorious turn when, like, if you're winning the game, you never won the game and it wasn't epic. It, by the very definition of the way it plays, it has to be an epic turn for you to win, which is so cool.
Yeah, I don't think that deck really, like, you know, grinds out narrow victories or whatever. You win by drawing your deck.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you can be in a really narrow spot, though. Like, you can be facing down a lethal board. Feels like there's, you know, where the opponent would be like, there is no chance I can lose from here. And then, as I say, you just one wheel or one thing that happens and you can start putting all those pieces together. And, you know, and your opponent is probably thinking, okay, that's cool. You can wheel, you can do this. Like, you're going to run out of mana, for example. But then you find the fast bond, or then you find any number of ways to start Urza to generate mana, or a Crucible to, you know, start bringing back lands that, you know, like Tolarian Academy that just taps for such an insane amount of mana. And then there's like three or four different ways to untap your Academy, and it just everything. It's just a work of art. And although I finished my rounds 0-2 and felt a bit like, ugh, this played out kind of like how Artifacts deck usually do for me, which is to say I want to play them, but they're not good ever. For sure, this one is definitely a case of user, not error, but user needs to understand how to find that needle a little bit better.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to sit there and be like, hey, Isaac, your deck didn't work, dude. Yeah. Like,
this deck's terrible. I can't win with it. It's broke. It's terrible.
Yeah, exactly. I just sat there with a tapped Grim Monolith and I couldn't do anything. But no, it's, yeah. I think there's a reason that he was able to top 8 at that other event with it as well. It's really good, but just a little bit complex.
Yep, yeah. But very cool, which is mostly what Highlander is about, I think, at this point.
Exactly. Yeah, I think it really embodies Highlander.
So look out for, we've got two more matches this round again coming up, and I'm planning to write another tournament report, so there'll be, you know, more content to consume in case this hour a week of us talking isn't enough.
Yeah, and feel free to join up to the 7-Point Highlander Discord or follow it on Facebook. It's an amazing event that they put on, Winter Mox. A really good turnout, and I think it's going to be really, really good for the format moving forward.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. It's very exciting, and it's cool to see an international audience.
Yeah, there's a lot of passionate people, and they've really thought the points out. It's good.
Trent posted another. It's not even a Soul Herder list anymore, is it? It's technically still an Ephemerate list, though it sounds like the Ephemerate's getting closer to being cut.
How is that possible?
Yeah, not at the moment, unfortunately. Ephemerate just doesn't work with the variation of the thing that I've tried to make the deck do.
Okay.
Sort of, it competes with things like Aether Vial, which looks like you're trying out. So I'm sure we'll hear about that next week.
Mm.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for the chats. And yeah, look forward to doing it again next week.
Yep. Thanks, guys. Appreciate you taking the time to hang out with us and listen to these boys ramble about Highlander.
Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week.